In our last study in the book of Genesis, we just gotten into the 39th chapter. And this 39th chapter deals with the story of Joseph, as does most of the rest of the book of Genesis. And we remember that Joseph had been cast into a pit by his brothers. He was then sold to some traders who came through, the Midianite and Ishmaelite traders. And they carried him into Egypt, and there they sold him to a man named Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, and he was also an Egyptian. So this man Potiphar had a rather high position in Egypt. He was captain of the guard, which meant that he probably was in charge of all the executions that the Pharaoh wanted to have done. That'd be a high position in that day. It also means that this officer of Pharaoh, that he was high up in the hierarchy of things. But he also was an Egyptian. And that's mentioned in three times in these first few verses, signifying that he probably was not a member of the house of the Hyksos, of the rulers of Egypt. He was actually an Egyptian native. And the rulers of Egypt this time were not Egyptian natives. Verse 2 says, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian." So as Joseph became prosperous, that is, as he knew how to do things to bring about more prosperity for the job that he was doing, then it helped his master, Potiphar. Verse 3, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand." Verse 4, "And Joseph found grace in his sight, and served him, and he made him overseer over his house and all that he had put into his hand." So now Joseph has a pretty high position in the household of a man who has a high position in the nation. And this has to go good for Joseph, actually. As Joseph prospered, and Potiphar had enough intelligence to recognize this, that he was prospering because Joseph was prospering. And so he would have some respect for Joseph's God also along this line. Verse 5 says, "And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field." So the servant here, who is a servant of God, actually, causes his master's house to be blessed. Blessed in the house and blessed in the field. And that's the way it is many times. Those that are faithful to God are blessed by God, and those for whom they work also receive some of this blessing, as well as those with whom they live receive part of the blessing. And it's God's blessing, but it's coming through the faithful servants of those round about. Verse 6 says, "And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not all he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." So despite any other faults that Joseph had, Joseph was intelligent, he was a good person, he was moral, he was decent, he was God-fearing, and the Bible says here, well-favored, and so he had the ability to get along with people. Just the man Potiphar needed to turn all of his household over to. So all Potiphar knew was what he ate every day. He didn't know anything else about his business because he left it in the hands of Joseph. And Joseph was faithful to Potiphar. But this was good for all concerned, including Joseph, and eventually it's going to be for the children of Israel. "Just as the Lord made everything Joseph did to prosper in his hand, so will it be with Christ when he comes again." Isaiah 53 verse 10 says, "He shall see his seed, he shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand." Now the Lord has had much prosperity up to now, of course, with his church, with the kingdom, with the spread of the gospel. But there's coming a time when he's going to be all powerful in every way, and every foe will be cast down. It's a beautiful token of God's grace that he often blesses even the masters of those servants who are faithful to him. In our modern day and time, masters are now employers or supervisors and so forth. And Potiphar eventually came to trust Joseph so greatly that he no longer even bothered to check up on his own business. Seems that now he didn't even check the record, he didn't know what he had, and didn't even offer any suggestions. It was up to Joseph to manage the business. And Joseph was doing a good job with the aid of God, of course. And we have to point out again that in addition to the fact that he had a good mind and a good character, Joseph was of a handsome physique and body. He was well-favored, a goodly person. A similar statement was made much later relative to young David in 1 Samuel 16:12, where there David was described as being ruddy and withal of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look to. Now these nice outward features of the body matter much to man, and they help individuals go far in the eyes of man, but although they do not matter with the Lord. For the Lord said to Samuel in 1 Samuel 16:7, when Samuel was looking for one to anoint to be king, but the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, nor on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. So the heart's what counted, and we know that in the case of Joseph, he also had the heart that the Lord wanted. Joseph was a godly person, and God certainly was working through him. We remember also that Absalom had handsome appearance. He had great features, according to 2 Samuel 14:25, but his heart was full of vengeance. He was filled with personal ambition and rebellion, and he was ungodly and did come to a bitter end. Now, verse 7 says, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, lie with me. Although adultery was subject to very severe penalties in Egypt, like it is in other places and has been in other places, it apparently was often committed and was often condoned, just as our society today. We, on the surface, would like to appear to frown upon adultery, but actually it's something that's condoned by our society. And in situations like Potiphar's household, where the wife is married to a husband who had been made a eunuch, adultery may have been regarded as something almost to be expected. Now, let me note here that we are assuming that Potiphar was a eunuch from the language that's used describing his position. And even if he were not a eunuch, it would not change anything about what's really taught here. Though nothing is said to this effect, one gets the impression that this was not the first time that his wife had made a move towards another man. In any case, as Joseph became more and more important around the household, and more on his own, and had more freedom and liberty, and had more exposure to this person, he became more and more attracted to this woman. She took a liking to Joseph, evidently. And Joseph certainly would have behaved very politely and considerately toward his master's wife. Of all the people you don't want to get in trouble with, it would be the master's wife, of course. But he soon must have realized that she was taking more than just a personal interest in him than was appropriate for her to do. There is no indication that he encouraged her in any way. Matter of fact, we're going to see that it looks very the contrary, that Joseph was the opposite of encouraging her. Finally, she impatiently decided that since this subtle approach on hers was not being very effective, she would try overwhelming him with a bold invitation into her bedroom. And so she cast her eyes on Joseph and she said to him flatly, lie with me. I mean, that's about as open and inviting of an invitation as anyone's going to have. There's no more hiding and playing little games now. She is out and out inviting him to do this. Well, as we can see from the description, Joseph was a virile and active young man, and this invitation must have been both flattering and tempting for him. Her husband was gone. None of the other servants were around, and even if they should find out, they probably would think nothing of it. And certainly they might hesitate to cross Joseph. And she was an attractive and eagerly available woman. It was her idea. She's inviting him to do so. He's not pushing himself off on her. And he could have even reasoned that maybe he's doing this woman a favor. And in the long run, they're doing his master Potiphar a favor. I mean, all kinds of ways that you can reason in situations like this to make them even more tempting. And Joseph had seen where his own brothers hadn't had a very high moral standard themselves. And anyone who knows anything at all about the activities of those in the society around about them will see this kind of behavior and begin to reason, well, maybe it's okay in my case too. And as we said, he could have even justified this, that he was performing an act of service to meet this woman's needs, which would in the long run actually have Potiphar. And so with all these rationalizations that he could easily have used, it would have been very natural to yield her invitation. It would have been something easy to do, actually. But with Joseph, there was one consideration which overshadowed all others. He knew that such actions were contrary to God's revealed will. Now, that is the most important consideration of all, not only for Joseph, but for us ourselves. What does God's will say about this? What would God have me to do in this situation? That's the thing to be considering here. Not what does society want? Not can I get away with it or not? Not can I just satisfy this little lust now? What does God want me to do here? What's God's will in this matter? Even though the Mosaic laws were not yet written, there was enough knowledge concerning God's purposes for mankind available for Joseph to know that beyond question, adultery and fornication was wrong in God's sight. He knew about the early stories in Genesis. He knew about the story of the creation of man and woman. He knew about the institution of marriage. And he knew that these other actions, sexually wise, were wrong. He knew from the account of man's creation that God had ordained the permanence and sanctity of marriage, and that none of man's convenient excuses for breaking this ordinance were justified in God's economy. And Joseph certainly was and claimed to be a man of God here. So in rejecting her invitation, Joseph tried not to offend her. Verse 8 says, "But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he that committeth all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So Joseph tells her exactly how he feels about this. He didn't really want to offend the woman, but he put the facts out here to her. It was not that she was an unattractive woman or undesirable, nor that he was condemning her as an immoral person for making such a proposal as this, but that there was a greater consideration that must take precedence. His master and her husband trusted him fully. It would be a terrible betrayal of this trust for Joseph to take one thing that he kept from him, his own wife. Potiphar now told him he could have his wife. That was one thing he held back. And of course, any time adultery is committed, there is a betrayal of trust. There's a betrayal of the trust on the part of the innocent married person, a trust that's owed to that person, and there's a betrayal of trust on the part of the unmarried person to their future married partner. Both sides are betraying a trust. They're giving something to someone else they have no right to give. That's what's happening in adultery and fornication. And that's the thing that Joseph is talking about here. He did not want to betray his master. He did not want to betray this trust his master's placed in him. He felt an obligation to be faithful to the master. And taking the master's own wife was not being faithful to the master. But even more importantly, such an action would be a great sin against God himself. Even though neither her husband nor the other servants should ever find out, God would know. "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good," Proverbs 15:3. Actually, all sin is fundamentally a sin against God, but especially sin against the institution of marriage, God's first institution, the most basic unit of human society. Sin against that organization, against that thing that God has instituted, sin against marriage, is truly a terrible sin. Verse 10 says, "And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her." So Joseph refused the invitation. Strong though the temptation may have been, Potiphar's wife was not persuaded by Joseph's good and proper reasoning. His reasons didn't matter to her. She wasn't concerned about the true and living God. She wasn't concerned about the institution of marriage. She wasn't concerned about anything but satisfying her lust here. And so she continued day after day trying to attract him to her bed. Joseph not only continued to refuse, but began to avoid her altogether, trying not even to be with her. And that's what he should have done. The more he is with her, the more he is playing with fire, the more the flames are being fanned to blaze even higher. So verse 11 says, "And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within." And verse 12, "And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out." The situation became so intense that one day when Potiphar's wife apparently determined that she would actually pull Joseph to her side by force. The time was opportune since everyone was gone. Possibly if she could get him intimately close to her, his resistance would be overcome and he would be impelled by passion to continue all the way. She felt that if she could really have him completely just one time, then he would keep on coming back to her forever whenever she wished. Now, of course, had that ever happened, then Joseph would have been a slave to two masters now, not only to Potiphar, but also he would have been slave to Potiphar's wife. Joseph, though, realized the danger of the situation, especially the spiritual implications. If he should yield, he pulled himself away from her arms and rushed out of the room, even out of the house. It seemed that she was trying to remove his clothing off of him. She possibly had already removed her own clothing, but when he saw what she was doing, he immediately fled. But she held to the garment of his as he fled. So now he left her presence, and he was now partly unclothed because she had part of his garment in her hands. And we'd like to note here very plainly that Joseph did the right thing. In the face of this temptation, he simply left the scene. There's no better way to avoid committing a sin than to leave the area, leave the scene, leave the place where the sin is going to be committed, so you're no longer there to do the sin. He left the area. He left her with his garment. He fled. And that is the thing that we should all do. When we see that we're being tempted to sin, leave the scene, get away, so that we're not even going to be able to do it. But although Joseph is able now to thwart this effort of the woman to cause him to commit this sin at this point, we see now she causes him other problems. Verse 13 says, "And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, See, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out." So at this point, the passionate desire of Potiphar's wife suddenly turned into the rage of a scorned woman. Knowing that her desire for Joseph was now completely impossible for fulfillment, that Joseph had the willpower that it took to overcome her temptation, her only thought was to humiliate him so deeply as she possibly could because he rejected her. Joseph's garment, the Hebrew word here is beged, B-E-G-E-D, apparently was a sort of a long cloak or robe, was still in her hand. She knew it would be interpreted as evidence incriminating her unless she quickly took the initiative by accusing Joseph. So she took the offensive here and accused him instead of having to defend herself for why she was holding this garment. So she began to make a loud outcry, calling for the men and servants to come to help her. And she cleverly appealed to any jealousy they might have had, any resentment they might have had for Joseph, and resentment they might have had for Potiphar for bringing this stranger in and letting him take over the household. She suggested that it was her husband's fault for bringing in an outsider, bringing this Hebrew who would come in and endanger all the women of the household to mock us, she said. And so you can see that she's clever in this. She is doing all she can to make Joseph look as bad as she can and to get everything on her side, accusing him of mocking us. Now she made it appear very obviously that this man who had been so elevated above all the other servants, this man who had so much trust placed in him, this man had attempted to actually rape the very mistress of the household. She'd only saved herself by screaming so loudly that he was frightened away, leaving his shed garment as he hasted out of her sight. Now, nothing is said here about whether the servants believed her story. The chances are that they knew her, as well as Joseph, too well for that. In their position, however, they could hardly challenge her story. Joseph probably went to his own quarters to await the outcome. Verses 16 through 20, "And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in to me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. So when Potiphar's wife returned home, she repeated her story to him, embellishing it with these words that would prejudice him and lies that had no basis whatsoever, the same thing she did to the servants. And so she seemed to place the blame on Potiphar for leaving this foreign slave with such authority and freedom around the house that he would try to take advantage of his own faithful and long-suffering wife. On hearing the story, the Bible says that Potiphar's wrath was kindled. Now, if his story were true, he truly had every reason to have wrath. He was justified in taking severe retaliation on Joseph, and the severest penalty would have been capital punishment. But it may be significant to note that the Scripture does not say that his wrath was kindled against Joseph. Furthermore, rather than having Joseph slain, he merely put him in that part of the prison reserved for political rather than for criminal prisoners. It almost seems that Potiphar also knew about his wife's problems, and he knew Joseph too well to really believe that he had actually tried to do this thing to his wife. There's no indication that Joseph made any effort to defend himself from these charges. They were absolutely untrue. He was being punished unjustly. He still kept quiet. Perhaps it was partly because he felt sorry for Potiphar's wife.